everybody's played with a magnet. Right, so we know what magnets are. We have some cheap magnets in the department. I have to get out to some of our tech people to get more magnets. I'm having a hard time finding any that actually stuck. They're so old. They're older than I got them before I even came here. But anyway, this is a horseshoe magnet because it looks like a horseshoe. It's really a bar magnet that's been bent. Okay, here's a typical little bar magnet. All right, these are marked with a north and a south, right? Because these two ends behave differently. Okay, these are what are known as permanent magnets. So magnets have been around for a while. People used to find magnetic material lying around, known as lodestones. Okay, and these had peculiar properties. If you take a little piece and you let it float, it'll turn around and point in a particular direction, which we now call north. All right, so it points to magnetic north. Okay, people took these pieces and put them on needles of compasses, and so you could walk around the compass and you would hope that the compass pointed in the same direction all the time. Well, over centuries it doesn't point in the same direction over time because the magnetic north pole changes slightly every year. It moves a few centimeters and wanders around, so that makes life a little bit difficult, okay, for people looking at centuries worth of data on the location of the magnetic north pole. Okay, so as I said, we have permanent magnets. I'm not going to talk too much about how these magnets are formed. Okay, for a bar magnet, right, we have bar magnets. We have horseshoe magnets. And a typical bar magnet is just a bar. Which is an iron bar. It's got to be, it's not just any old metal. Okay, certain types of material. All right. Easily retain their magnetism. Okay. And we label these with various poles. We have the north pole and the south pole, such as this bar. And as I mentioned before, if I take that bar and bend it, I end up with a horseshoe magnet, right? So what do we know about some of these? If I take two magnets and line them up like this, if I have a north pole here and a south pole at that end, what happens? They attract. So you already know this. Of course, those are opposite. And then if I put two north poles together, then what happens? Repel. And likewise, if I put two south poles together, those repel. So since this one's marked with an S, and this one doesn't seem to have any markings, then what I can do is figure out which pole is on here. And I'll just pass this around. Something to do while I'm talking. Okay? All right, so we can talk about these various poles. Okay, the neat thing about these magnets is if I take one of them and cut it in half, what happens? If I take a magnet and I cut it in half, get two little magnets. So that's comes the south, that becomes the north. Okay, in principle, if I keep cutting these, I will get little magnets. Okay, up to a certain point. Though, as far as we know, it's impossible to cut this in such a way that I'm just left with a North Pole all by itself or a South Pole all by itself. In the case when I have one of those, it's called a monopole. Or a magnetic monopole. Mono meaning, of course, one. Okay, and there are people that sit in caves waiting for a monopole to strike. That's what you call a physics experiment. Okay. So you have people sitting around looking for monopoles, right? Monopoles are predicted to exist, except nobody's actually seen one. There have been claims every once in a while, but they haven't been confirmed. Okay, monopoles are part of the particle physics. Okay, and strike the imagination of many. Okay. So for the most part, we are only going to see poles that are of that form, north and south. What we can do is we can map out, right? Well, at this point, we see that there's a magnetic force, right? If you're going to see attraction or repulsion, there's a force involved. So that's the magnetic force. There are also magnetic field lines. The idea being that I could take a bar magnet, and I can walk around the bar magnet with a compass. Okay? And so what the compass is going to do is it's going to point in a certain direction. And what I can do is map out the field. Very much like what I did when I walked around with a positive test charge around an electric field, right? I used the positive test charge, drawing through the force on it to determine the direction that the electric field was. So we could do the same thing here. I could walk around, I could take a little magnet, all right, I could put a magnet sitting here and see which way it lines up. And it actually points in this direction away from the north. And then I come over here, I can see where it points. Okay, et cetera, and I can go around and I can map a field. And it turns out that the field lines look something like this. Field lines point in towards the south, away from the north. If I'm sitting up here, the field line would be pointing in that direction. And we can go around and map out lines. And we can get a diagram here that looks very similar to an electric dipole field. Except it's a magnetic dipole. Mapping these out. The field lines go from north to south. So here are my field lines. Just like for an electric field, when the lines are closer, the field is stronger. So you can see over here, the magnitude of the magnetic field is stronger. Out here, it's weaker. The further away I get, of course, it's weaker, as you might expect. So that's a picture of what the field lines look like outside of a magnet. And then a typical experiment that you may have even done at home is you take a bunch of iron filings and you put them around the magnet and they distribute around and show you some of these field lines. Except they don't have arrows on them, right? They just give you an idea what the field pattern is. They don't tell you which direction it's pointing. Okay, another place you can walk around with a compass, of course, is on the surface of the Earth. All right, so for the Earth's magnetic field, all right, so here we have an Earth. Got some kind of continents or something around here. Polarized cat's not as big as All right, but, so we have that, we've got, I don't know, here's Florida, Mexico. All right, so we're, those are rough pictures there. All right, so there's the Earth. And then the North Magnetic Pole is somewhere up here. The North Magnetic Pole up in this area is not in the same direction place as the Earth's North Pole, the geographic North Pole, okay, which is where the X, the Earth spins around, which is probably somewhere up there. So if I were to look around the Earth with a compass, we would find that the compass points in different directions. In fact, I don't have to stand on the Earth. I could go up in a plane. Okay, we could map out the magnetic field around the Earth. And it turns out the magnetic field around the Earth behaves as if there were a gigantic magnet at the center of the Earth. Now, this is only an approximation, right? It's a crude approximation. There are deviations, of course, in the field, and it has to do with the iron core of the Earth, but that shifts around, right? And so the makeup is not perfect. But nonetheless, we have some field lines. Look very similar to field lines that I just drew from the bar magnet. So we have these field lines that are going off like this. And then this is three-dimensional, so you can imagine rotating that around. So that anywhere around the Earth we can go, we can get the compass to point in a certain direction. Okay. And it turns out that the magnetic field line is not parallel to the Earth's surface. Okay, so if I look somewhere around here, maybe down here, okay, we can check out somewhere near the equator. This is a little bit off, of course, it's only a sketch. We can go around and map out our field lines, and we can see, let's say if I'm over here, I can see it better, right? We can see that the magnetic field points in that direction, okay, roughly near the equator. This is a pretty skewed equator that I have. Okay, over here, there's the field lines. Over here, we see these field lines pointing upward, but when I come up a little ways, all right, this is not quite pointing, okay, along the same direction. In fact, in Wilmington, okay, right, this is pointing in a certain direction. It's not only not pointing directly along the surface, but it's also pointing at a slight angle. There is a vertical component and a horizontal component. At some point in the lab, I don't know, maybe before the break or maybe after the break, sometimes there's a lab on the magnetic field of the Earth in which you'll actually compute the the horizontal and the vertical components of the magnetic field. So essentially, if I'm standing on the Earth, you would measure with a compass a field that's along the surface of the Earth, but the actual field is as a vertical component. So what you're going to do is you're going to measure this direction, and you're going to get the other direction from knowing what's called the dip angle. The dip angle has to do with that relationship between the vertical and the horizontal component. But this is a crude picture. Now notice the way my arrows are pointing. Is this a north or a south pole? Magnetic pole. It's going to be a south magnetic pole, which is counterintuitive. All right, but our compasses point toward the south pole. And this is north. So if I were thinking of this as a bar magnet, okay, then that's the way I would construct the poles. All right, so those are just a few qualitative features of magnetic fields. Obviously, we want something quantitative. We want to be able to measure things. And the place to start is actually to consider what happens when some mass goes through a magnetic field. Generally speaking, if it's just any old mass, not much is going to happen. Okay, but if it's a charged mass, then there will be an effect. So there are, let's see, charges in magnetic field. So for centuries, people just played around with magnets. They didn't do that much in terms of scientific studies until probably the late 1700s, early 1800s. And they started investigating magnetic fields, electric charges, and the like, and found a lot of these relationships, so like Coulomb's law that we've already run into. So one of the things that was found out is that if I have a charge, and if this charge is moving in a magnetic field, it's going to experience a force. Okay? And so that's an experimental fact. Now I need to draw magnetic fields. Well, here's a magnetic field. Okay? What other kinds of fields can I draw? Like I did with electric fields, draw a uniform magnetic field. So a uniform meaning what?
Equal.
What does it mean for some a field to be uniform? Constant. It looks the same everywhere, or at least in the region I'm doing the experiment. So I could have a charge sitting here. I could have a magnetic field whose field lines look relatively uniform. Of course, I'm doing a 2D picture. You could imagine that being in space, three-dimensional. Field is the same everywhere, and I have a charge that's moving in the field. I'm going to say that that charge has some velocity at the moment that I'm looking at it. All right, so here's the challenge. How can I create a uniform magnetic field? Okay, good. I could take two magnets like this, and I could look at the space between them. Okay? Or maybe I could take one magnet and bend it around. Okay? But the idea is if I put a north and a south pole, I can look in this little region. All right? And so we have arrows, and I could have a little magnetic field. And if I stay away from the edges, okay, somewhere we're down there, okay, I have a nice uniform field. And if I'm looking about protons and electrons, maybe that's not too hard to imagine. The proton or electron is going to see a very uniform field at this point. Or I could make really big magnets, right, which people do. Okay, and we could take a look at those. So we can create such things. Now I'm going to need some letters because, you know, the velocity, right, the magnetic field, and the force that's going to be on this charge. So the letter that we use for the magnetic field strength is, as you might guess, B. Okay. Don't ask me. I should look that up. I've never looked for the source of that, but out who started using B and why everybody's using B, and I often call this a B field or a magnetic field strength. Though there is an M in the business, which is reserved for something else, like magnetization. But anyway, so the magnetic field strength is going to be given by B. I have a charge moving in this field, and it's going to feel a force. Okay, so So the first thing I'm going to do is tell you the magnitude of the force acting on the charge. It's going to be proportional to the charge. So the bigger the charge, the more force it will feel. It's going to be proportional to how fast the charge is moving. So if I put the speed in here, then the faster it's moving, again, the more force will be acting on it. And what else do you think it depends on?
Angle.
About the magnetic field. So it's directly proportional to the field. If I crank the field up, if I have a way to control a knob to increase the magnetic field, okay, then, and we'll find out how we can do that in another chapter. So the force is QBB, except there's one other little detail. It depends on what the angle is. So let's say that the charge is moving at an angle theta with respect to the magnetic field, then this force is also proportional to the sine of the angle. So that's the force the charge will feel. Okay? Now we know the force is in newtons, charge is in coulombs, speed is meters per second, the sine, of course, has no unit, so this has some SI unit. And the appropriate SI unit for the magnetic field is called a Tesla, capital T. Anyone ever hear the word Tesla before?
Tesla coils.
What?
Tesla coils.
Tesla coils. And whom made Tesla coils?
Tesla.
Tesla. Nikolai Tesla, who was famous for a lot of things when it comes to this. Big battles with Edison and GE. The big moguls, J.P. Morgan, he had some issues getting him back. So, capital T stands for Tesla. The Earth's magnetic field is roughly a half a Tesla. It is roughly 0.4 times 10 to the minus 4 Teslas. It's actually very weak. Good thing, otherwise your watches and things would be wanting to go, well, in the days you wore watches, okay, be yanked on. Okay, so since that's such a small unit, this particular value, 10 to the minus 4 Teslas, was given another name called a Gauss. So roughly a half a Gauss is the strength, okay, of the Earth's magnetic field. A strong bar magnet's going to be at least one Tesla, right? Which is, of course, 10,000, roughly, times the strength of the Earth's magnetic field. One can actually have much stronger magnets. Why is it called a Gauss? Anybody hear the word Gauss before?
Gaussian surfaces.
Gauss was a famous mathematician. Right? Why would his name be tacked to this? Because he was also famous for doing experiments in measuring the magnetic field of the Earth. And so Gauss had the unit named after him as well. All right, so this is the key formula for deciding what the force is on a charge moving through a magnetic field. What the magnitude of the force was, the magnetic field, as you see from my notation, is a vector. So another question is, what is the direction of the magnetic force? The direction of the magnetic force, well, this is going to be defined by what's known as a right-hand rule. This is one of several right-hand rules that we are going to introduce in this part of the course. The first thing is we have to know what our right hand is. All right? During the next test, I'll see a lot of people using their right hand, not just to move a pencil. Okay? So the idea here is I want to figure out what the force is that's acting on this. So there are several types of right-hand rules for determining things like this. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to take, and I'm going to put my fingers in the direction of the force. Okay, so the magnetic field. I'm going to take the thumb and put the thumb in the direction of the velocity vector. Right, the direction that the charge is moving. And my palm is going to push in the direction of the force. Okay, that's the right-hand rule. So, here's my field. There's the charge moving up my thumb. My palm pushes in. And so the direction of the force is into the board. Okay. So the direction now there are other ways of doing this, but that's probably the easiest way for you to remember. Okay, for the direction of the force. Except there's one little caveat. Alright? This is if the charge is positive. Yes. Was great. All right, so protons would go in that, have a field of force. So if a proton's going in a field like that, there's a force inward. Okay, if it were an electron, just reverse it. Which means let the electron feel a force coming out of the board. So that's what we have in terms of the right-hand rule. So now we know that if I have a charge that's moving in an electric field, it's going to feel a force. The magnitude of the force is given by this expression. The direction of the force, okay, is given by a right-hand rule. Okay. So that's the main new piece of information. Okay. Get rid of all this mess. Of course, it's relatively easy to put a few numbers in. So let's say we have a proton, and these things are generators and accelerators, and we have a proton beam, for example, and we look at a proton, and that proton is moving at 4 times 10 to the 6 meters per second. So that's pretty fast. And let's say that the field is about 0.40 Tesla. And we'll pick an easy angle. It moves at an angle of 30 degrees. So it kind of looks like that picture. A little bigger than 30 degrees. All right, so what's the force? All right, that's Q, V, B, sine theta. See, did I give you everything you need? What's Q? 1.6 times 10 to the minus 19 coulombs. All right, everything's in SI units, basic units, in order for us to get newtons. V was 4.0 times 10 to the 6 meters per second. The field is 0.4 Tesla, and the angle's 30, so I need the sine of 30. What's the sine of 30? Just a half. Everybody should know the sine of 30 by now. Well, many of you are not supposed to know the trick. Let's see. So we go through here. That's a half. So that's 0.2 times 4. That's what? 0.8. 0.8 times 1.6 is, I don't know, 12 point something. About 13, so that's going to be something like 1.3 times some power of 10. So what is that? Well, what's the first? It is 1.3 times 10 to the what?
Negative
13. Negative 13. Do we agree with those numbers? Maybe. I'll believe anything you say. What are the units?
Newtons.
What do we know about that?
It seems quite kind of small, doesn't it?
Okay. Wow, it does seem small. What's the acceleration on the proton? The proton experiences a constant, let's say it's a constant 4, it's not going to be constant very long, because actually, what's going to happen? If there's an acceleration, the velocity is going to change, and therefore, the speed's going to change, it seems. All right, so anyway, what's the acceleration? Well, we'll see what happens. So how do I get the acceleration of the proton?
Force equals mass and
acceleration. F equals ma. So I just have to take F and divide by mass. 1.3 times 10 to the minus 13 newtons divided by the mass of a proton. 1.67 times 10 to the minus 27 kilograms. Right? Well, it doesn't take much to think about this and see that that's a big number. So even though that force seems small, the acceleration is huge because we've got a tiny mass we're applying that to. All right, so there's a large acceleration here, which is what? What's 1.3 over 1.67?
0.78.
And then that's minus 13 plus 27,
14.
Negative 14. So that's about 8 times 10 to the minus 15. What are the units?
Positive 14.
Oh, positive. What? Meters per second squared? That's a huge acceleration. Right, so this magnetic field will have some severe impact on the proton. Of course, what I haven't told you was what's the direction of the acceleration.
Exactly.
So there are some interesting things to think about if I want to look at how charges behave when they're moving through magnetic fields. Because, right, this is just the acceleration at an instant. This is the force at an instant. All right? So there's a force acting on the proton that's moving in the magnetic field. Yeah, an instant later, with such a big acceleration, you might think that it's going to do something, like change its direction or something. All right? So the next question we have is, how do charges actually move when they're in magnetic fields? It's much easier for me to think about that. We can see what's going on here because we see, oh, the force is perpendicular to the board, whether it's positive or negative, right, into the board or out of the board. It's still perpendicular to the board. It's hard for me to draw those forces, right, in three dimensions. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to change my orientation. Instead of looking at the force going in and out of the board, I'd like to draw the force in the board, which means I should orient the board this way and have the magnetic field going in and out of the board. Okay? So, magnetic fields perpendicular to the board, or a particular plane that we're investigating. Form magnetic fields, and I want to draw them perpendicular to the board. So how do you do that? Well, let's see. You can draw it in the air. Okay, well, that's kind of hard to do. So the convention is the following. If a magnetic field line is pointing into the board, I can think of that as an arrow. Right? You know bows and arrows? Okay, what do you see when you see an arrow going away from you?
A dot.
Dot?
A
point. Depends how fast it's going, right? Okay, what's at the back of an arrow?
Feathers.
Feathers. Okay? So if an arrow is going away from you, you'll see the feather end. If it's coming toward you, you'll see the pointy end. Right? Of course, you'd prefer it to go the other way, right? So there's my arrows, my feathers on the arrow. Okay? So that corresponds to going into the board. For a uniform field, I can draw pictures like this to indicate into the board or your paper. Because when you're doing homework, you're not going to be using a board most likely. Right? Into the book. Okay? If I want them coming the other direction, then I will look at the point, the tip of the arrow. So that's the way we can draw uniform magnetic fields that point in directions perpendicular to the plane that I'm drawing. Okay. Now I can ask what this proton is doing if it's going through the magnetic field. So let me consider a magnetic field that's going into the board. I guess you get the idea. Hopefully there's enough there. I can throw some more in if I need them. Now what I want to do is have, think about a proton, okay, that's going to be coming into the board. Let's say I have a proton sitting here. That proton is entering the field in the indicated direction. So just it comes in here and enters the field. Let me extend the field a little bit so that it's already now in the field, so we don't have to worry about the edge too much. And now the question is, which way is the magnetic force acting on the proton? Zero. Okay, I got a zero. We agree?
Okay. Pushing it into the board.
Okay, now I've got one pushing it into the board. Okay, I got a zero pushing into the board. Is one of those right? Alright, so what are we supposed to do? Right hand rule? Alright, so what does the right hand rule say? Put your fingers in the direction of the magnetic field. Which direction is that? Into the board. Put your thumb in the direction of the velocity vector. See, that's what you do during the test. You're going like this, you know.
Have to be a little careful.
Okay. Velocity vector is pointing this way. Magnetic field is into the board. Which way is the palm? Up. Which way is the force? Up. Okay, so now we have, at this instant, there's a force acting on the proton. Okay, do we all agree with that now? Yes. And so you have to think about this. Practice the right-hand rule as you're going through. As I said, there are going to be several right-hand rules for different types of problems with magnetic fields. But this is important. So, all right, so the velocity is going this way, magnetic field is going that way, it's pushing up. If the magnetic field were coming out, which way would it be pushing?
Down.
If it were that picture, but I had an electron, which way is it pushing?
Down.
Down. Right? So, all the right-hand rule, and everything we're doing here is for positive charge. If you have an electron, you just flip the direction for negative charge. I'm going to stick with the proton, though. Because remember, this is a dynamic problem. The proton comes into the magnetic field. It experiences a force. It wants to go this way, but there's a force on it. What's it going to do? The acceleration is upward. It's perpendicular to the direction. So, in a fraction of a second later, where's the proton going to be? Right, there's an acceleration that way. B is going in this direction. So it's going to want to go kind of. So as it's going forward, it depends how fast it's going, right? It's going to want to at some point be over here. Now I can exaggerate things a little bit. Yellow. Let's say the proton goes a little bit this way, but the force pushes it up a little. So there's my new location. Before it was just a horizontal component of velocity. Now I've got a vertical component of velocity because of that acceleration that's vertical. So if I have a velocity this way plus a component that way, chances are this is going to be moving with a new velocity in that direction. Right? New direction. Yes.
Why wouldn't the force be zero? If it was moving this direction, if it was moving this direction and the force is this way, wouldn't that be perpendicular? put one on? Like if you put one on straight and then one on right for the movement, doesn't that make sense?
Okay, well, let's see. What is the angle between the two of these? Said something wrong earlier. What is the angle between the two of these? Okay, velocity is this way.
I used to have some old stuff here.
All right. Okay, so what do we have here? We have, there's the velocity, there's the magnetic field, right? What's the angle between them? And what is the sine of 90? What is the sine of 90?
One.
Like I said, you guys believe everything, right? Sine of 90 is 1. Okay? So. And so we're at, well, I might as well write it down. I'm going to need it in a minute. So what is the force? Force is equal to QV. B times 1. Okay? Alright, so where am I? So I know what the magnitude of the force is. I can divide this by the mass. I did an acceleration, right? It pushes upward. Alright, it's going in that direction. Now the question is, where is the force pointing now? Square. Okay. Field's going into the board. What's happened? The velocity vector's changed. So now the force is pushing in this direction. Perpendicular to the velocity. So what does that mean? A little bit later, where is the charge going to be? Okay, it's going to be maybe over here. But the velocity is going to be pointing maybe in that direction. Now I'm being very crude. Okay. I'm not being quite exact in my drawing, so it could be off a little bit. But you can see the pattern. Now where's the force going to point? Yeah, perpendicular to the velocity. And this is beginning. This is going to follow a path. So we can see, here's a path. This path is beginning to take the shape of a curve. In fact, one can show this is a very particular kind of curve. What kind of curve do you think this might be?
Exponential.
What is that? What does it look like?
Semicircle.
It's supposed to be anyway. Okay, like I said, it's off a little bit because I was not being quite as careful. But these velocity vectors actually should be tangent to the curve. They're perpendicular to the forces. The force is always pointing to the center of the circle. Okay, if I extended the magnetic field over there, I would have a complete circle, and somewhere in the center is where this is pointing, and I would end up actually with uniform circular motion. One can show that the work that's done by the magnetic force, okay, on the proton is zero. Okay, so the speed's not changing, right? The energy's constant. This is just moving around and around and around with the same speed. That's uniform circular motion. Okay. For uniform circular motion, what do we know the force is to keep an object going around a circle?
Centripetal force.
The centripetal, right? It's basically centripetal acceleration that attains. So if I write this as mv squared over r, you'll notice that there's a relationship between the magnetic field, the charge, the velocity, and the radius of the circle, and the mass. So I could actually tell you what the radius of the circle is. Okay? So
In this case, all right, we have charges moving in magnetic fields. They feel a force. All right, if I actually follow them, okay, they trace out these orbits. Okay, so that's the lesson for today. We're going to come back. We're going to continue this. We're going to extend this to not only charges moving by themselves, but moving in wires.